Greetings and welcome to another episode of Soundography, a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
And today we are talking about a band that I keep forgetting that Hammond keeps recommending to me and telling me that I know them. They are my favorite of the prog rock, metal, Jesus-loving... I don't know. There's a very small subset of the music world that is prog metal Jesus prog metal bands.
Yeah,
and these guys for me are the top of that.
They rock on water.
And it's funny. We'll talk about this a little bit later. But if it weren't for looking them up on Wikipedia, looking them up on AllMusic, and getting information about them from there prior to recording the show, I never actually would have known. Would never even have noticed that they were had Christian influences. And I guess we will be talking about that later, because that's part of the way that they don't describe themselves.
Yeah.
And we'll kind of explain what the heck that means. But King's X, not to be confused with King's Cross, the station in London where that's frequently abbreviated to King's X.
Yep.
But That's a whole nother.
So would it really confuse things that they did an album called 9 3/4?
Only if the only way you could listen to that album was to shove it really hard against a pole that, a column in the tube station. All right. So let's go ahead and get into this. And, here's our full disclosure moment.
Okay.
For us, this may have a little bit of a feeling of deja vu. For you guys, not so much, because this is actually the second time we've recorded this episode due to a little technical glitch on
Audacity did not like King's X.
Apparently not. So
I got a basketball or a beach ball of death.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't go away.
Wouldn't stop spinning. So in case it is some sort of Audacity incompatibility with the phrase King's X, we're now going to start referring to the band as the Foo Fighters throughout the whole rest of the episode. won't be confusing at all. No, I'm kidding. All right. King's X. They are an American rock band that combines funk and soul with gospel and blues styled vocals to create a sound that somehow meets at the crossroads of prog and British invasion blues. The song topics themselves are pulled from the band's own struggles with self-acceptance and religion. And they signed to Megaforce Records back in 1987 to kind of start their journey.
Okay, before we get into this, I want to I want you to answer this question. Had you been familiar with them before the first time I had you listen to their music?
Because when you sent me a YouTube video, you sent me a link to a YouTube video for, and I think it was It's Love.
No, it was actually Summerland.
Summerland, okay. And if you were to say, hey, are you familiar with the band King? Well, you actually did say that. Hey, are you familiar with the band King's X? And I said, no, not at all. And it wasn't until I heard that song, I'm like, oh, I have heard this. I'm familiar with this song. Listening to 1 week worth and all 13 or so studio albums, 12 studio albums, some EPs and live stuff in there too. So it's probably like 8 or 9. There were maybe 3-4 songs that I recognized or that were familiar to me, but I don't know why the band's name never resonated with me. Like, even hearing these songs, I wasn't saying, oh yeah, I totally remember King's X. It's like, oh, I totally remember this song. This is a band called King's X? Huh, how about that?
And that's the way I felt about Toad the Wet Sprocket, was I just thought the 90s pooped out those songs.
It was just a spontaneous generation from
some musical
checkerboard
ether.
Pattern t-shirt, lumberjack looking t-shirts. And
yeah. So I knew them. I had their first album and I really liked their first album, but then they kind of slid off my radar in the intermediate time until 1996. And then they performed on an album called Falling Into Infinity by a band that I like. And then, I went back and started rediscovering them again. And it was great going back and kind of finding out what they'd been up to since the first album.
That's cool. That's a cool way to rediscover stuff that you'd forgotten about. And that's happened with me. That was kind of, speaking of a Christian rock group, a band called Krumbacher Duke that I'd completely forgotten about. And then something, you know, there was some sort of connection with one of the artists playing on another album that made me go back and listen to those things again and totally reconnect with that stuff. So I 100% agree with that. And I know of what you're speaking.
So with Crumbucker Duke, is that what you get when you play Husker Du backwards?
That's right. Yes. you get a, everybody starts at finish and works their way back to go. And when you finish, you go, Crumbucker Duke. The band throughout the years, each of the members of the band also released solo projects, side projects, were part of other other groups and things. We'll talk about that near the end as well. Mm-hmm. But the band's lineup is Doug Pinnick on vocals, Ty Tabor, and Jerry Gaskill. Early in their career, King's X was able to get on major arena tours with Iron Maiden, AC/DC, Scorpions, Pearl Jam, and Motley Crue. Some big names there that they toured with. And the spiritual nature of the band's lyrics, particularly on their first four albums, has often led to them being labeled a Christian rock band. However, that's a label that the members themselves have rejected.
Yeah. So as listening to this, I'm a big fan of the band Galactic Cowboys too. And mm-hmm. when I was listening to this, I realized that there was a lot of similarities by the way the songs are constructed, by the way the harmonies are done. But what really separates these guys from the Galactic Cowboys is the kind of the gospel and blues influences. Mm-hmm. They both are, you know, based out of Texas for a while. I mean, there's a lot of really strong like lines that could be drawn between the two bands, but there's a definite more of a gospel-y, I won't say religious because they reject it. I don't want to step on those toes, but there's a definite more of a preachy feel to the music.
Yeah. And there definitely isn't that with King's X. At least I didn't feel so. Yeah. And even when you look at some Christian rock bands' albums, like the song lists or stuff like, you know, Praise Me and In Your Shadow or something like that, right? Like,
what's her name?
Amy Grant?
Amy Grant's Baby Baby. Just that's so Christian.
It is, even that title though, it kind of isn't. But you look at like an album listing for King's X, and I'm pulling up Please Come Home, Mr. Bulbous, because that's my favorite of their albums. Favorite of my album titles for sure. And you look at album or song titles like Fishbowl Man and When You're Scared and Smudge, Charlie Sheen for some reason. and you don't, there, you know, there isn't very overt, at all references to Christianity, spiritualness, any of that stuff in the titles. And it's for me, if I had not seen it on AllMusic and Wikipedia, I'd have no idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I like that. I like, you know, cause you don't get non-Christian rock bands who make a point to sing about things that are anti-Christian. You know, it feels like if you're going to label yourself a Christian rock band, you kind of now cemented yourself into a corner where you can't make drug references. You can't make sexual references. You can't, you know, you got to be very careful about the content mm-hmm. unless you're saying, unless you have a song called No Sex Until Marriage or a song called Drugs Are Bad or something like that.
To Hell with the Devil.
To Hell with the Devil, Striper. Right, exactly.
We're gonna have a patron make us do Striper one day. You know that, right?
I'm sure. Yeah whatever. Bring it on. Bring it on. We've done Iron Maiden. I feel like that bell's been rung. So... It's not going to be a big, jump for me to do Striper after doing Maiden. Anyway, so 1979 in Springfield, Missouri, bassist Doug Pinnick and drummer Jerry Gaskill were asked to work with Christian rock band Petra. And within a month, the project fell apart and they were left without a band. I forgot about Petra too.
Yeah.
They quickly found work with Phil Keaggy's live band. They toured with him in support of his first release. And while on tour one night, Ty Tabor approached Gaskill. Ty was a member of the opening band for that night's show. The drummer for Tabor's band had quit the night before the show, and Tabor had volunteered to take over on drums for the gig. However, seeing as he had no drums, he was forced to ask Gaskill if he could borrow his kit for the show. Gaskill obliged, and the show went on.
I'll also throw this out too before we get actually into the music, because I could say it almost every album. There's a huge hint, homage, inspiration, I don't know how you want to phrase it, to the way the Beatles built harmonies and songs in the way they do it.
For sure. Yeah, very tight harmonies, and obviously with a more modern flourish to them, but I picked that up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. When that aforementioned tour ended, Pinnock and Gaskill returned back to Springfield, and they set about looking for more work. Gaskill landed a job doing demo work for the Tracy Zinn Band. That also happened to include Ty Tabor on guitar. The two became friends and were involved off and on together in different musical projects. By 1980, Pinnock and Tabor were starting to collaborate on a regular basis. And eventually, the three men decided that it was time to pool their talents and start working together. For a while, they were a four-piece band with a series of short-lived rhythm guitar players. Basically, they Spinal Tapped it and brought in somebody, and then they'd disappear and,
yeah,
in a puff of smoke and a little green globule on the on the stage. They played out a lot in Springfield's bars and clubs, doing classic rock covers or classic rock songs, top 40 covers, things like that. And during that time, they'd been working out their own material, and they went by the name Sneak Preview originally, picked 10 of those songs, and recorded a self-titled independent self-titled released LP. And they released that in 1983. They only did about 1,000 copies of Sneak Preview. They weren't impressed with the results themselves, and rumors are that they personally may have destroyed about half of the copies that they had pressed.
And there are a few of the songs available on YouTube, and I think there might even be a website that has like Sneak Preview tracks let off of SoundCloud or something that I think I might have found, but I bookmarked it when I was doing research and I figured I'd go back, but... It's
knowing how much they hate that music, I'm surprised that they'd allow it. I mean, obviously, it could just be, you know, that they are unaware of it, or that they just don't believe it's worth the effort to try and take it down. But
yeah.
This was a little peek into the future. The Door, the song The Door, was rewritten and used on Ear Candy. You're the Only One was recorded again for Black Like Sunday. And they took the break from Inside Outside and reused it on the song I Can't Help It, which you'll find on Faith, Hope, Love. That album, Sneak Preview, had a very early 80s sound in both songwriting and production sound. A couple years later, the band moved to Houston. They toured with Morgan Cryer. Tabor and Pinnock gained some co-writing credit on several of Cryer's songs on their second album. Sneak Preview couldn't get a contract of their own, but Sam Taylor met with them, encouraged them to change their name to King's X, and a change in musical direction as well to more complex arrangements. And this guy, Sam Taylor, became a mentor, a manager, and a producer for the band. Some even call him like a fourth member of the band because he was so involved with them. They signed with Megaforce Records in 1987. And the next year, King's X released their first album, as King's X called, Out of the Silent Planet. It was hailed by critics, but didn't do well commercially. Peaked at number 144 on the Billboard album charts.
I'll throw this out.
Sure.
That 144 for a band like this in 1988 is pretty good, because 88 was the height of like the hair metal guitar solo types, like the operatic vocals and the androgynous men kind of thing, and almost no harmonies. These guys were very... I hate to say it, but they're kind of proto-grunge.
Cutting edge.
Yeah, and they're proto-grunge.
Yeah, right. Well, you're not the only person who feels that way, Hammond. We'll get to that in a little bit as well. the album title, Out of the Silent Planet, comes from a C.S. Lewis novel. This is going to be one of the first of many references to the author. The cover art shows how much they'd embrace their new home of Houston, Texas.
So I don't know if you noticed that, but... the bottom half of the artwork is the outline of the southern end of Texas.
And I didn't notice. I'm looking at it right now here, because it just looked like mountains kind of going into like a tornado shape. But that's totally the bottom of the shape of the state of Texas. And then you've got the
city is actually Houston.
Skyline.
That's actually Houston.
So they really like Texas. They really took to that.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. From that album, by the way, King and Shot of Love were released as singles, but that didn't give them a lot of attention, sadly. The first track on this album is Out of the Silent Planet. So it's kind of like a sheer heart attack situation by Queen, where you release a song that's named after one of your other albums, but not on the album for which it's named.
and I'll throw this was and still is my favorite King's X album.
Is it Gretchen Goes to Nebraska? Yeah. Yeah. It's considered to be a landmark album by fans, but it sold only slightly better than Out of the Silent Planet did. They toured with Anthrax, Suicidal Tendencies, MOD, Living Color, Billy Squire, and Blue Murder.
Okay.
One of these things is not like the other.
The thing that stands out for me...
all of these things are not like the others.
Yes. The things that stand out for me in this is, I think part of what the problem was, it was these guys are really hard to put into a box. Are they prog? Are they Christian? Are they metal? Are they pop? Are they... I mean, sure. The lots of questions are not fully answered by listening to them. Mm-hmm. So what they did, it seemed like, oh, let's put them on the Suicidal Tendency shows and see what sticks. Let's stick them with MOD and see what sticks. Now, on the list, I think that Living Color and Anthrax make the most sense. But
totally Living Color. I never even made that connection until I saw Living Color in the show notes here, but they're very Living Color sounding.
Mm-hmm. And so... I think that part of the problem was that they just couldn't find an audience because no one knew where to throw them.
Mm-hmm. They're kind of like a really good cooking ingredient, and you're just trying to find the right dish to put them with to bring out their flavor and make them stand out.
I mean, if I were going to stick them on a tour, and I know you're going to give me some crap about this, but I really think they should be on with Dream Theater and Living Color and, and if you want to throw in something heavier just to get a bigger crowd, you throw in something like Mastodon then you get it covered, or King Crimson or something like that. And it gets that right audience for them.
Yeah. And you don't put them with Christian rock bands. You don't have them tour with Stryper or Petra or anything like that. Yeah. You have them.
Talus.
Is it really Talus?
Yeah.
There you go. That's another one. Yeah. No, that makes total sense. For sure. And you figure out what aspect of them you want to bring out. And that's the kind of band you put them with.
Yeah,
if you want them to be, if you want them to move into that hard rock arena, then you do put them with like a Living Color. But if you want them to sound more punk, then you go Suicidal Tendencies or metal for Anthrax. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally makes sense. Summerland, Mission, The Burning Down, all fan favorite songs from this album. The difference in The Garden of St. Anne's on the Hill appears to be another C.S. Lewis reference. To his book, The Hideous Strength. Pleiades is credited as ground zero of the King's X sound. It's one of their older songs that finally made it onto a record. And then the song Over My Head got radio and MTV airplay. As did, I think, Summerland, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And both really good songs.
Yeah. 1990, they released the album Faith, Hope, Love. Of Faith, maybe there's that spiritual reference. It was the first album of theirs to crack into the top 100. It's Love was a successful single from this album. And David Letterman used We Were Born to Be Loved as commercial bumper music for a long time. For me personally, this was when I started really getting into King's X. Those first couple albums, like, all right, kind of seeing where you're going with this. And then this one was like, all right, this is, I'm noticing stuff and I'm paying attention. And I can see, I can definitely see why you like it.
So here's the thing is that they have the Faith, Hope, Love. Their first single is It's Love. I was really surprised there wasn't It's Hope and It's Faith on the album.
Thank you. Yeah, that'd be interesting. It's funny when they so don't just have a title track, but have songs that kind of play into the title track. Well, you get that a lot with bands where they won't do a title track, but the title of the album maybe will come from a lyric from one of the songs on that album.
Yes.
Sonny Came Home by Sean Colvin has the line, "A few small repairs. It's time for a few small repairs." Mm-hmm. And that's the lyric from, or that's the name of that album that it comes from, as one of the examples of that. They opened for Iron Maiden during the No Prayer for the Dying tour in late 1990, and they opened for AC/DC in early 1991.
I kind of understand Maiden because Dickinson's voice is strong and operatic and dramatic.
Sure.
I don't understand the AC/DC.
Now, even in both cases, these guys aren't as heavy as either of those bands. Maybe closer to AC/DC than Iron Maiden as far as just the level of that metal, heavy metal sound.
Yeah.
But, as far as a warm-up act, I would picture them. It's funny, I would picture them more with Iron Maiden because they would really like warm up to Iron Maiden.
Yep.
Like they'd be that middle step before you get up to the Iron Maiden step.
Mm-hmm.
The song Junior's Gone Wild was featured on the soundtrack to Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
Which sounds familiar because we've covered, this is the second band we've covered that's been on that soundtrack.
Yeah, no kidding.
With Primus being the first.
And I guess what we should do is grab that soundtrack, look through the rest of the list, and then start filling out season four of Soundography based on who's on that list. So get ready because it'll be bands like...
Warrant.
I don't know. Yeah, right. Why?
Well, Extreme is actually on the first album. The first soundtrack has Extreme.
Oh, does it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's your 90s. Boy, there's your sound of the 90s thing, too. Although the only song by them I know is that More Than Words.
See, I know, but in the mall chase.
Bill and Ted mall chase.
There's that Play With Me. Do you wanna play with me? That one? That's Extreme.
Yeah.
And you like that song. I know you do.
I probably do.
Yeah.
I have to hear it again. I'll probably be YouTube and watch them chasing after Beethoven in the music store and Joan
Miss of Arc.
Van Ark. Yeah. Miss of Arc. That's right. Yeah. Waterloo. They moved to Atlantic Records, which was Megaforce's parent label, to release their next album, which was called, get ready for it, King's X, their self-titled album they released as their third or fourth official album. This was released in 1992, a more darker, introspective effort than their previous albums. Again, despite critical praise, didn't translate into purchases from the record-buying public, and it sold less than the previous album, Faith, Hope, Love. Black Flag was the only single from the album, but it did get some play on MTV. Not long after this, the release of this album, the band split with producer, mentor, and manager Sam Taylor, and they took a year off to consider their future. They started pursuing careers outside the musical world, like Ty Tabor took up motocross racing, for example.
Or also known as we said in the first time we did it, Moto X.
Moto X racing, yes. Yeah. Motox. Pearl Jam's bassist Jeff Ament had declared that King's X invented grunge. In 1993 and 94, grunge was at its peak, so the band went looking for a new sound when they returned back to music. And they found Brendan O'Brien, who had also worked with Pearl Jam as well as Stone Temple Pilots.
Can we roll back to the critics talking about these guys a little bit?
Sure.
It is really rare, I think, to find a band that the critics like more than the fans do.
You think? Because I think that's...
Because usually, especially in this genre, let's think rock, heavy metal. It is harder to find critics liking this more than the fans do. And
I don't know. I feel like so often you hear the phrase, despite critical praise, or, you know, in spite of being a critically acclaimed movie or a critically acclaimed album or critically acclaimed band, I feel like that happens more often than despite the fact that critics hated them.
But there are lots of times where movies succeed even in spite of critical comment.
Sure.
There are lots of times where
more times when critics don't like something that the general audience loves it versus critics loving something and general audiences don't love it.
And that's kind of what I'm saying is that it's hard and it's rare to find that.
Rarer. I think it's rarer than the opposite, but it seems like that is what I, you know, you often do hear that. And maybe it's just because I happen to like bands that critics enjoy. And
well, you do like that Europop stuff that all the critics seem to fawn over.
Yes. Where's the Spice Girls in critical acclaim? Where, I ask you. next album was 1994's Dogman, or Dogman, what's his power? It had a heavier sound from the band. They also cut back on the abstract and spiritual lyrical content. And Atlantic Records really gave them a push for this album. They had a successful tour that included a performance at, yes, you guessed it, Woodstock 1994.
How many bands are we going to cover that were there that we didn't realize were there?
I think, is there a parallel? Like, can we look at that, the list of Woodstock performers and the list of people who performed on Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, and like the Venn diagram is just going to be a perfect circle? No connection, by the way, to a perfect circle who we talked about last week. The album Dogman was... It did give them a return back to the top 100, but it didn't sell well, and support from Atlantic Records soon drifted. In 1996, they released Ear Candy, which really got sold big time to the band's large, faithful core following.
And it's a move that kind of a couple record labels were doing in this time where grunge was really big, and they had these other acts that were not grunge. And so they're really hitting their, you know, get on their mailing, because mailing lists were brand new. This is 96. And that, you know,
right,
it's developing mailing lists, find their website. And anybody who kind of touched base in those arenas, they were sending out things saying, they've got a new album coming out and you want to support them because you're one of their fans. There, I can list a lot of bands that had releases in 96 that were not grunge, that had a lot of direct, like Internet 1.0 direct marketing.
Sure. Ear Candy did not have the mainstream success that the other albums had and was soon out of print, and they were dropped from Atlantic Records.
I can see why this is out of print. This album might have a fistful of songs on it that are good, but it really has no direction. There's no through line. There's no kind of thing to tug on to make the album cohesive.
It's uneven. This would have been a better EP because it feels like it's a bunch of great songs with a bunch of filler kind of thrown in among all the other songs, for sure. Tapehead was released in 1998, a couple of years later. It was their first album with the new label, Metal Blade. They modified their creative methods by writing and recording the album together in the studio, as opposed to writing their songs or writing the pieces individually and then coming together to record them together. They also elected not to hire an outside producer, and they recorded the album at Pinnock Hound Pound and Tabor's Alien Beans Studios, thus cutting production costs.
If you were going to
the next two albums in similar methods.
If you were going to do a home studio, what would you call it?
Yeah, because it's, you know, Coverville Studios is just kind of boring now that I see these. It would be something like...
Well, the band had, what was it, Shangri-La?
Right, they recorded Shangri-La Studios. There's, I'm trying to think of what Mark Ronson's studios. We just watched that Lady Gaga documentary on Netflix, and he had a really cool name for his studios. Mine would be like Elastic Biotron or something like that. Like something really, really out there that if they said, oh, where'd that name come from? I said, oh, I came up with it while I was recording Soundography with Hammond Chamberlain.
So I have one that I've kind of kept around in my head and either okay. call it, well, I've got two. I've got Broken Rose because it just sounds good. The
Broken Rose.
Yeah. Or yeah. I have.
That's what Guns N' Roses.
That's what they're suffering from now.
That's where they recovered, recorded Chinese Democracy.
Or I've got one that called Masking Tape. And it's because of the love of theater and then the tape of the recording studio.
Right. And masking, mm-hmm. like you could record backward masking yes, on all of your albums.
I could. Every single one of them could have like listen to Beyond the Playlist on it.
Perfect. Listen to Beyond the Playlist. Perfect. The next album came out in 2000. It was called Please Come Home, Mr. Bulbous. I love that
and album the album artwork is also really good.
It is. It's clever, too, because you look at it and you're like, all right, it's a dude with a bulb, a light bulb for a head. Oh, and he's casting a shadow. And then you realize, oh, he's also casting a shadow of the logo on the wall behind it. It's kind of They had some fun with Photoshop with this one, I think.
Mm-hmm. Weezer should talk to them.
Weezer should, right? What's with this boring single color album covers of just the band in front of a solid color? Come on now, get with the Mr. Bulbous program here. Between tracks on this album, they've got a bunch of tongue twisters in Dutch and Japanese that were collected while they were out on tour. The next year, they released Manic Moonlight. They experimented with drum loops and other sounds for the first time. The new direction and the short length of the album was not well received by hardcore fans, but it was reviewed well by critics.
Now, is this the one that has your favorite song on it?
I hate that song. Yes, this is the one that's got, I've got to pull it up so I make sure I get the damn name right.
It's called Water Ceremony.
Water Ceremony. Yeah. It's 18 seconds of someone loudly drinking from a plastic water bottle and the band laughing or something behind it. But it's like they've got the microphone right up next to the water bottle. And for some reason, they include it on the album. Well, probably because the album was so short. It felt like they needed a little bit more time. Yeah, it's only a 45-minute album. And probably because they thought it sounded funny. I can't even make it through a few seconds of that.
Well, like it'll if be, it was a, it will be dropped in here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, great. Yeah, if there was a way for me to include a set list, a song list at the end of Soundography of five songs you need to stay far away from, all five of them would be Water Ceremony. for every artist we ever do in perpetuity, my song list would always be King's X, Water Ceremony.
Oh, I don't know. That creepy baby loop from Mushroom Head could be on there too.
Yeah, okay, maybe, yeah.
We could mash them together.
Oh,
creepy
no, we
baby
can't.
Water Ceremony.
Yeah, we can't, and we can't and won't. In 2003, they released the album Black Like Sunday. The group arranged and recorded an album of original songs that they'd been regularly performing in concert during the Edge and Sneak Preview days of the early 1980s. The cover was selected from artwork submitted for a contest.
This is a great idea to get fan engagement. This is using fan club and fandom at its best.
Yeah, it's a cheap idea too. I mean, I know that it's frowned upon big time by professional artists and things like that, where you do a competition where basically you're having a bunch of artists send submissions and you only have to pay the one you like. And but if they're fans, if it's fans doing it, heck yeah, man, right? Because they're getting some notoriety. They're doing something for a band that they love and support. And there's no loser in this thing, except I guess for all the other people who lose, whose artwork is not selected. I guess there's lots of losers. In 2004, they released the live album Live All Over the Place, and Inside Out Records, which is a label and a label that doesn't have a cool reverb effect on their name. Inside Out Records, a label known for supporting a wide variety of progressive rock and metal groups, released all the albums moving forward, including Ogre Tones from 2005.
My favorite title of all of King's X.
Just in King's X, though.
Yes, because I there are other titles. I can't go broad strokey, but I can tell you Ogre Tones is a great album title.
Does the album cover itself feel like it should be like a 311 album?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
But it also makes me think that maybe sometime they may play the end of BlizzCon.
Oh, I see that too. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking more along the lines of like the, you know, all that green.
Yes. No.
Those are Screaming Faces in there. Yeah. It's kind of like when I noticed the band album cover that had the outlines of their faces. Uh-huh. I'm just noticing all the Screaming Faces radiating out from the center. That's cool.
Really cool. With the name like Ogre Tones, I can't not think they could play BlizzCon at some point.
Yeah, right. Right. More work. I guess no, those are orcs, not ogres.
Yeah.
This album, by the way, was described as a return to classic King's X. The tour featured the band playing every song on the album during shows. So they would basically track through the album and probably have a couple sets of classic tracks from other albums before this. But that's, you know, that's something you see. I think of like Fish, or no, is it Leftover Sam? One of those bands that does every Halloween, they do an entire album back to front. They cover it. It's not even one of their own.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can think of other bands that played, like The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway was played.
Sure.
Which makes sense.
Definitely makes sense if it's like a concept album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you want to tell the whole story.
Operation Mindcrime.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine Deer Hunter probably did that a couple times.
I'm sure they have.
Yeah. In 2007, Rhino Records released the Rhino High Five, King's X, with, you count them, 5 of their songs as a sampler.
We had this idea first.
Right, exactly. It's their playlist. It's their picking 5 songs for a playlist. Damn you, Rhino! Well, yes, they did it 2007.
I know.
We thought of it first retroactively. In 2008, they released 15, or XV, XV, or Cross 5. They toured with Extreme and then followed up with a European tour in 2009.
Okay, Extreme, again, Extreme, good match.
Yeah, I guess so. I need to, aside from the Bill and Ted song, Big and Ted, and More Than Words, I need to go listen to some more Extreme, apparently, because I don't know. I can't think of anything else they've done. Somebody out there is saying, I have an idea for my $50 Patreon donation for what to make them listen to.
Start with Pornograffiti. It's a great album. And then work in either direction.
Cool. If Gary Sharon is out there listening to us, he'd be the one who'd probably say, oh, I'll pay $50 and make them talk about me.
Hey, then we could also listen to Van Halen, the one that they had the song from the Lethal Weapon movie on it.
That's right. The one Van Halen album with Gary Sharon.
Yep.
Exactly. Molken Music, a label started by Wally Farkas, has released a lot of King's X live material and demos. Mm-hmm. In 2012, Jerry Gaskill suffered a heart attack, which stopped the band's touring. The band released a live recording called Burning Down Boston, live at the Channel. 6/12/91, the date, and the proceeds went to help pay for Jerry's medical bills. In 2014, Gaskill suffered yet another heart attack, and he had to undergo double bypass surgery for that one. But here's where they're at now. Doug has reported that they've started work on their brand new album, and they continue to perform live. So you can go out and see King's X in concert.
Yep. I'd like to see them. I think they're a band I'd like to see. I'd like to see them with Garth Brooks, just because they always get mixed up with people that don't match.
That would be a great example, right? King's X and the Wurzels. Yeah. Anyway, tell me some statistics and general notes about this band.
Okay. So they were listed at number 83 on VH1's Greatest Hard Rock Artists. That's pretty good. I mean,
that's high praise for a band that I never can seem to remember the name of.
I understand why they're not higher, but I also understand that they're on the list. They deserve to be there. Mm-hmm. So each band member has had a long list of side projects and guest appearances, and I'm just going to kind of run through a few of those. Doug Pinnick, he's been on Supershine, The Mob, Razor 13, Trace Mountains, KXM, which he's doing with George Lynch of Dokken. Okay. Grinder Blues. He's also appeared on Dream Theater's album.
Take a drink.
He was on 24/7 Spies, and he's performed with Steve Stevens. Gaskell, he's done some solo albums. One's called Come Somewhere, Love and Scars, and he's played on the album Let It Go for the Galactic Cowboys. He covered. He was a drummer for that album, which is a tie to the Galactic Cowboys.
Okay.
And then Ty Tabor, he's done 7 solo albums. He's played on Platypus, which I will gush about later. He was in Jelly Jam, Jughead, Xenophobe, and he's made appearances on lots of other people's albums too.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I noticed that when I was doing searches for their music on Apple Music, that I'd get tons of different bands that it would recommend. Like, it would say, oh, if you're looking for King's X, you're also going to like KXM and the Jelly Jam and Blue Murder and Lynch Mob and stuff like that. And even surprisingly saw stuff like Stevie Ray Vaughan and I can't remember who else came up. But, you know, it's obvious that they perform on a lot of other artists, other artists' stuff. Yeah, Lynch Mob. Have they done anything for Is Enough Is Enough?
I think that's just what they might sound like them.
Just like a, yeah.
Like,
a
hey, if you like this, then the
you might also like. Yeah.
The analytics say you'll probably like these guys too.
Sure. Well, we mentioned seeing them in concert. Let's say you go see them in concert. And before you can pack up all your belongings because Billy Squire is coming up next, what song is it that you're going to be really disappointed if you do not hear King's X perform live in concert?
Okay, so our list is made of Dogman because it was one of their largest commercial successes. Mm-hmm. Black Flag, Pleiades because it's just so old. I mean, it's been around forever, and I'm sure it's been played a lot. But my bet is Summerland or Over My Head, because they're both older songs, and they're off Gretchen, and Gretchen's their best album. And that's my theory behind it.
Okay. I would have added It's Love to this list as well.
Okay.
All right, here we go. First one is We Were Born to Be Loved. Not even on our radar there on that one. But then you've got Over My Head, Dogman, Groove Machine, Goldilocks, Go Tell Somebody, Summerland, Vegetable, Pillow, and A Box, all rounding out the top 10. It's Love is down there at 11, Black Flag. There you go. And I always like looking to see who they cover in concert. And one of them will get mentioned in a second, but I'm Your Captain Closer to Home by Grand Funk Railroad is one that they've performed in concert, as well as Sweet Home Alabama by Skynyrd, which I'm sure comes from their top 40 classic rock cover band, bar band days.
Okay, we didn't do this last time, but I'm going to do it this time. Okay. Give me an artist you'd like to hear King's X do in King's X stylings.
Oh, like have them cover.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's good. I would like to hear them... let's see. It would have to be like something that's out of their genre. So no heavy rock, stuff like that. I would say it'd be cool to hear their take on something new wave 80s. Maybe Gary Newman's Cars.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. Something very electronic-y that they could break down and really, really tear up with their more traditional analog instruments, I think would be really cool.
So I went a similar direction, but I went newer and was thinking here, having them cover, and this is a tip of a hat for later, covering a boy band. Having them do large.
My fire.
I was actually thinking like Larger Than Life or something along those.
Bye Bye Bye, maybe. Uh-huh,
yeah.
Like
bye,
yeah.
Bye Bye would be great. Actually,
that would be really cool. That's a really good. Yeah, I'd never even thought about that. We should almost make that a regular thing. Who would we like to see this band cover? I think should be maybe a new segment that we add to this thing.
We did that with Leonard Cohen because
We did.
It made the list more interesting.
Yeah, but it wasn't who would we want to hear Leonard Cohen cover, was it?
No. It was who we want to cover.
Yeah, what covers do we want to hear?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need to add who would we like to hear this band cover.
Okay. I'll make a note now.
Please make a note of it. let's add one more thing to Hammond's list of stuff to keep track of. While he's writing that down, I'm going to jump on in with my five songs, my set list. So you've got your greatest hits, and I don't even know what's on the King's X greatest hits. But I'm going to go ahead and do my five, and you can add these to the greatest hits and as well as Hammond's selections and make your own new collection of King's X songs. My first one is Shot of Love from Out of a Silent Planet. It's one of those early songs, but it was one that drew my attention very early on as not sounding like the rest of the stuff from that first album or from that first King's X album. Basically the way I do these is as I'm listening to the music, I'm working or doing some other things that don't involve, obviously don't involve listening to stuff for Coverville or for TMS. So, I may be writing or working on a website or coding or something like that. And the music is there. And if whatever catches my ear and makes me stop and pay attention, that's what I write down on my list. And the first one absolutely was Shot of Love from Out of a Silent Planet. Second one comes from Dogman. And it is called Manic Depression. If that sounds like a familiar title of a song, it should, because it's a cover of the Jimi Hendrix tune. They do a great job with that. I think that they do a very straightforward rock take on that. And as I'm saying that, I'm wondering who else I've heard do a cover of Manic Depression recently that they kind of now remind me of. I had to look this up. I didn't look this up on the previous recording of the show. Styx. You know, I think that's what it was Styx's version of Manic Depression that made me think about this version a lot.
Well, now you can play, hopefully, this version on the cover-a-thon when I'm on.
There you go. Yes, probably.
Not the Styx.
Oh, yeah. Not the Styx version, but the King's X version. Mm-hmm. Seal and Jeff Beck do another version that does another.
That could be cool.
Yeah, that's a really good one. Because Seal's voice, you wouldn't think of it being so much like Jimi Hendrix's, but there's a lot of timbre
yes.
that's close mm-hmm. between the two of them. So yeah, you can totally hear.
Well, that is it. And it's a shame though, cause I'm not sure if Seal survived this year's advertising campaign for Shark Week.
I heard about that. I love it. I think that's hilarious. On the dock, and he's getting attacked. That's so good. American Cheese from Ear Candy is the next one that I had on my list. Just a great, you know, it again, took note of it as I was listening. And it jumped out to me as a really, really good track. Then we move to Tapehead, the album Tapehead, and the song Happy, which sadly is not a cover of the Pharrell Williams song. But every once in a while, as I was listening to these guys, Pinnock's voice would remind me a lot of Kevin Gilbert and Toy Matinee. And it's on this song, it's on Happy, that for whatever reason, I'm like, oh my God, this sounds like it could be, you know, the hardest edged version of a Toy Matinee song ever. Because it sounds like Kevin Gilbert singing. It's got a lot of the vocal tricks that they used to do in Toy Matinee. And I think it would not sound out of place at all on that one and only Toy Matinee album. But
so this is the big reference and the big give, the fact that we had time between.
Yes.
You mentioned this the first time we did it. So I went and listened in between, and mm-hmm. now I actually feel like all of my King's X experience is a little covered by that, or affected by that Kevin comment Gilbert, because now I'm hearing it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's there's a lot of the style of Kevin Gilbert singing that I hear in Doug Pinnock's voice mm-hmm. for sure. And, which I'm totally fine with. I like that a lot. And then the last song in my list is False Alarm. Which comes from the album Manic Moonlight. Here's how I knew I liked it. It's very rare for me while I'm listening to music for soundography, if it's a band I'm not familiar with, especially if it's a song I'm not familiar with, for me to sing along with the song on the very first listen. Like the chorus is hooky enough that I caught myself singing along to the chorus while I was listening to the song for the very first time. And for that, that song gets a mention in my list of five. So absolutely including False Alarm and Stop on that album, Manic Moonlight. Stop before you get to the last track. Pretend that it's only a 10 song album.
And guess what's playing right now. Song.
Nine song album. You're playing Water Ceremony again. Mm-hmm. I feel so bad for our listeners. Pretend Manic Moonlight is a 9 song album and Stop after Jenna.
All right. So I'm going to say that you missed one and you have a 6th song and it's called Wonder and it's Out of the Silent Planet. And
Yeah.
And you forgot how much you like that song and how they blend the sounds of the voices and the music together.
Is that so I can have a 6th and you can have 6?
Yes,
instead
exactly.
Of having 5 and you having 7?
Yep.
That's totally fine. I'll take it. Yes, I like that song for all those reasons that you mentioned.
It didn't make the notes. I'm just being helpful.
I appreciate that. You're so insightful and you know exactly what I'm thinking.
All right. That was actually my first one. Number 2 on my list is Out of the Silent Planet, but it's the one from Gretchen Goes to Nebraska, so it's the first track on that. And I really love the way the harmonies in the music work. They have a way of balancing their voices within the music so that they can rise and fall together but not cancel each other out, which is amazing when you're dealing with that much instrumentation with that much vocal and not have it just become noise.
Right, yeah.
And then I pick Shoes from Dogman because it's Dogman and Shoes and
Fetch.
And Yeah.
I like that it's so it's not Dogman. I mean, I guess the song, right? You hear him singing Dogman. So, okay, it's Dogman.
It's Mr. Dogman, attorney at law.
Larry Dogman, private eye.
Well, he does have the ability to find things.
He does.
He's probably a bloodhound.
Yes.
All right. So I like this song, and I said this the last time, and Brian's like, duh. I'm going to say it again. And this song is the one that really shows that they can sing. I mean, if you had any question, put this song on and all questions are answered and put away.
Yeah, for sure. The harmony is everything nice and tight. Really cool.
And
really
there's a lot of moments where there's really minimal instrumentation in it and it's just them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And then I picked Marshmallow Field from Please Come Home, Mr. Bulbous. I actually was really hoping this was going to be some sort of weird homage to Strawberry Fields, but it wasn't. But I love the mix of the voices and how they play against the music and then the build into the chorus. Because the chorus is kind of, I don't want to say it's disjointed, but it's very different from what you think's going to happen when you're listening to the verses.
Mm-hmm.
Then I picked Fly from Ogre Tones. And the reason I picked this one is because they use the word fly to kind of help structure the song. The verses are so grounded and kind of low end and I don't want to say bassy because that gives a bad impression of what it is, but they're lower in register. Right. And then we hit the choruses, they fly, they get higher, they get more lush, they get brighter. They kind of demonstrate what they're singing about in the chorus as opposed to the verse.
Yep.
All right. Now, I mentioned Platypus earlier. They have two albums. One's called Platypus, and the other's called Ice Cycles.
Okay.
Go get Platypus. They have songs on there like Chimes, which is amazing. They have the Plat Opus, which is awesome.
Clever. It's like Overtones, Overtones level clever.
Yeah. I pick Nothing Left to Say, but if I could recommend another album after our Spotify selection and our, you know, Amazon collection. Platypus's first album, I highly recommend. I cannot gush about this album more.
Would you say that of all the side projects and things like that, that is the one to go for? Like, that's the one you need to check out?
In my opinion, yes. But there are other things they've done that are great. KXM is great. Jelly Jam has its moments. Gaskell playing on the Cowboys album is great. But for my money, from end to end, that first Platypus album is really good. So I'm just gushing about it because I want people to think, oh, I'm going to at least try.
Yeah.
Go try, because it's worth skipping through. If you don't like it, it's worth listening to. If you love it, it's worth buying if you really love it. So go listen to Platypus. So I picked Nothing Left to Say. Mm-hmm. And then my last one I picked was Move from XV or 15. I picked it because I was wrapping up my listening session and I was finishing up the notes and this song just grabbed me. And I'm like, well, screw it. I can do seven. And I really, really liked it. And I would feel remiss if I didn't stick it on there.
Cool. You know what? It's fine. You can have seven. It's totally fine.
You had 7 on level 42, even though 3 of them were mine.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure Squeeze. I can't remember how many I did for Squeeze, but I could have done like 12 for Squeeze.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that, deja vu. That is going to do it for King's X.
We hope.
Check, is the needle still moving?
Yeah, they are. They both are still going.
A little record button still. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So wrapping up with King's X, I liked them. I like giving kind of an overall feeling on it after we do one of these. And there's something to the whole prospect of listening to one band for a week and nothing else. And
sometimes it's a big mountain to climb.
Yeah, sometimes.
We have a
yeah.
couple coming up that are going to be big mountains for either one or both of us.
I think this next week is going to be a big mountain because it's not specific. It's a big genre. And that genre, here's the tease for next week, modern boy bands. So what defines modern versus
okay, so let me
old-timey boy bands?
Hang on, let me pull up the book again. And I've read more, so I'm gonna I've got more to say. It's called Song Machine. It's called Inside the Hit Factory, and it's by John Seaback, or Seabrook. Sorry, John Seabrook. Mm-hmm. And it goes into how modern pop music is more of a factory product than creative endeavor. Mm. And he draws the line of modern boy bands at New Edition.
Okay. So anything after New Edition.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
He's like, New Edition led to New Kids on the Block, which then led to all the other things.
Sure. I can totally buy that. Now, for it to be a boy band, I imagine, number one, they've got to be more pop than rock and roll. Like, it's got to be...
It's got to be boys. You know, let's start there.
It's got to be what?
Boys.
It's got to be boys. Okay. Right. And not men. So like Led Zeppelin, even though they're all male...
But that
they're
was
not a boy band.
That was pre-New Edition.
What?
That was pre-New Edition.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Fair enough. Let's say Weezer.
Okay.
Weezer's not a boy band, even though all the members are male.
It's got to be predominantly pop-oriented. It's got
to
be heavily
folk. They all have to be under a certain age?
No, I don't think so, because there's some old boy bands. I mean,
really?
Boys to Men is old.
Yeah, but they weren't when they started.
Okay.
If they would have come out, I mean, they are.
I guess.
Boys.
I guess you're mad. Yeah.
It's right there in the title. They actually knew the trajectory that their age would take them. Predicted. They expertly predicted where they would be in a few years. It's amazing, actually, how prescient they were. But okay, so Boys to Men aside, like. Again, Weezer, I wouldn't call boy band.
No. Pop-oriented, probably choreography-focused as well, harmonies.
Right. Do they have to all be vocalists, or are there boy bands where only one person ever sings?
I don't know.
Because I think of Hanson. Hanson's a good example. All three boys sing, but you've got a bass player, you've got a drummer.
Yeah, no, I would still call Hanson a boy band. I think it has to do with production value, and I think even like position on the charts might be something we look at.
Yeah. Oh, this will be great. Well, this will probably be one of the first things we talk about on that episode is the definition, because it might be different for both of us. I think they can't drink. None of them can be drinking age.
But they are anyway.
But they do anyway because they're touring and they're rock and rollers and they've got to drink. Yeah, this will be good. I'm excited to...
They're probably all going to be ex-Disney Mouseketeers.
Oh, now we're getting a little too specific. Oh, my gosh. Then Ryan Gosling is in a boy band. All right. Well, we can't wait to talk about it. We can't wait, actually, to see what you guys think about it, too. Here's how you get a hold of us. Email us, soundographypodcast@gmail.com is the email address to use if you want to reach out to us, which we encourage you to do so. Whether you have questions, comments... whatever, suggestions, that sort of thing. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Soundography. That's our address. Wear it out. And you can visit us online at soundography.com for everything else. Of course, there you're going to find links to all of our episodes of the show, all three seasons, as well as links under each one of those episodes where you can check out the playlist on Spotify that we create. You can find links to buy like a greatest hits album. In this case, there is a Best of Kings X that I'll be linking to. You can also support us, support the show. If you love us, then you'll do this for us, even if it's just a buck a month. I mean, come on, that's nothing, right? Patreon is where you want to do that, patreon.com/soundography. The higher you go with your pledge, your donation, the more stuff you get from us. I just received a big bag of guitar picks that is now going out in our next swag shipment. We've also got stickers that I'm working on, and all sorts of goodies coming up. So support us, and we give you love right back. Again, that's patreon.com/soundography. And of course, if you have reviews, we'd love to hear those too. The good ones anyway. Review us on iTunes or Spreaker or wherever you like to leave your reviews. You can also put them on Twitter. You can email us for your review, whatever. We want to hear it. We want to know what you think. So before we leave,
we don't do this very often, but why don't you tell people about the other things you do?
We've done this a lot. We've done this episode a lot.
Yes, we have. Okay.
I know what you're talking about. We don't do this very, this is now the second time we've done King's X.
No, I meant the other things we do.
Yes, we should. You can hear me on a show called Coverville every week at coverville.com, where I find if you get kind of the impression from my song list that I do like cover songs, check out Coverville. I do it every Wednesday, and done a couple episodes recently, did a tribute to Tom Petty. And also a tribute to Mark Bolan from T-Rex, as well as a little bit of extra music from other glam rock bands from that era, from the 70s, like the New York Dolls and the Sweet and Susie Quattro and stuff like that. How about you, Hammond? Where can people hear more of Hammond Chamberlain?
I do a show called Beyond the Playlist with Jay Hammond C, where I interview people who make their living in creative fields and do creative things for their living. And it's a lot of fun. I talk to a wide variety of people, and I always have a good time talking to them.
That's cool. Do you just talk about the playlist on that show?
No. We go way beyond it.
Oh, you do. It's right there in the title.
Yep.
That's where I was going with that. Excellent. Well, check us out on all those shows. And of course, be here for our boy band episode of Soundography, which is coming up next week. On behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Abbott saying that's going to do it for this episode of Soundography. We're going to see you right here next week for another edition. A new edition.
Is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.